presents the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome once again to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Times, read by Charlotte Green.
Pictured above is the bulldog Bosun, the product of 14 years of crossbreeding with its owner, Ken Mollett.
Thanks to Mrs. J. Redman of Surrey for that. Now let's meet the teams. Please welcome on my right, Francis Ween and Tony Hawkes. And facing them on my left, Jeremy Hardy and Nick Clark. And before we start round one, here's a cutting from Manchester's City Life magazine.
The People's Canal. Photographs depicting the sweat and spit that went into the Manchester Ship Canal.
Thanks to Darren Condry of Cheshire for sending that. Francis, your first question. Who bit his nails over an EMU?
It's Gordon Brown. Did you know that John Burt bites his nails, the Director General of the BBC? But because he's an important person, he can't be seen to have bitten fingernails. Because the cameras are on you, as Gordon Brown discovered when he went to the stock exchange. And so John Burt rather cleverly clips his toenails when no one's looking, puts them in a little box which he keeps on top of the television set, and when he wants to bite his nails, he just opens the box. And removes them. But,
Gordon... It's true. It will never be broadcast, but it's nevertheless...
Gordon Brown, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, went to the stock exchange, nails bitten to the quick, and it's all because of this emu. There's a wonderful headline on the front of the Times saying, Blair promises not to harm emu. Very sweet of him. They're quite sensible as well, if you remember what happened to Michael Parkinson. But this is the monetary union emu, not to be confused with the currency snake, the euro-dollar gerbil. But it's all to do with these spin doctors, because there's some new Labour policy where no one is allowed to say anything in public, so it all has to be done by nods and winks. And unfortunately, the nods and winks change every day, so no one has a clue. I mean, there's total confusion everywhere, which I suppose was what they intended.
But they say it's, people have said it's an incompetent policy. I think it's actually an incontinent policy. Everything seems to leak out before it's meant to.
Brown Monday, brown trousers. It's the confusion over Gordon Brown's intentions towards European Monetary Union, which resulted in the unfortunate headline, Chancellor privately wants to enter EMU. So, that's 2 points to Francis, and we go on to Tony, who wants to check in for the good life.
Right. Check in. Slovakians. Gypsies. Obviously, a lot of Slovakians recently have been watching the Slovakian holiday programme. With Jill Danskovova or whatever, Jill Danskovova. And on this it just said that Britain's a great place to come. You know, why be victimised in Slovakia when you can take an 18-hour coach ride, hop on a ferry and be victimised in another country?
Sorry, I just wanted to point out at this point that Mike O'Brien, the Home Office Minister, in the course of the story was sent to Bratislava in order to do something which doesn't come easily to new Labour ministers. He had to go to say... Well, actually, chaps, Britain's complete crap. You wouldn't want to come here. You've paid all the tea in China. Don't do it. It's terrible. You know, lottery every Wednesday and Saturday. You wouldn't want to come here. You know, it's Labour government for the next 32 years. Sure, you sure you want to come? He had to go and do this in public.
Yeah, but he forgot that these people have spent years living in a one-party state and they're rather missing it.
Nick, what went west, out east, costing millions?
The Hang Seng Index went west. A lot of chaps over there decided that it was time to bail out of stocks and shares in Hong Kong. And there are lots of plenty of tall buildings there, so it's good for that sort of thing, because obviously when the traders have had enough, that's quite easy. From almost any office in Hong Kong, it's a long way to the ground.
Lots of money wiped off the values of shares. Isn't that marvellous? All those avaricious, petty bourgeois, Daily Mail reading money box listeners. What a glorious thought. All their savings wiped out in one day.
Have you looked at your National Grid shares recently, Jeremy?
Could we get a lot of money box share listeners listening to the News, Chris?
They're used
not
to.
Not anymore.
Not since Louise Botting left.
Oh.
It was only the name, though.
One observer said he'd never seen chin so low on the floor before, but chin so low said he'd pick himself up when he got... Jeremy, here's your musical clue. Hold Me by P.J. Proby, the original trouser splitter. Jeremy, where were bonds made casually?
Yeah, this is the Tory bonding session. Tory MPs don't normally have bonding sessions without their researchers present. Nonetheless, in order to reinvigorate the party, Hager's made them all go to Eastbourne, which is where all the happening and youthful people retire to. So they all went down there and they all tried to look casual. It just doesn't work for Tories. They just look like the staff policing a school disco. They look utterly lost. And they all had a bit of a sing song and they tried to sing pop hits of the day by Vera Lynn and stuff.
They did sing an Oasis song there. Did you see that man, Michael Ancrum, the constitutional spokesman or whatever it is, got his guitar out and started strumming away, and he did a bit of Dylan, Blowing the Wind, and then he said, well, do something modern now, Oasis. And one of the other Tories said, he's always been a bit of a hippie, Michael.
And no one asked William Hague to sing I Will Survive, though, did they?
This is all about the Conservative bonding session at the Grand Hotel Eastbourne, where MPs were instructed to wear casual trousers. This came as a shock to many of them, who aren't used to wearing trousers at seaside hotels. Mr. Hague's bonding session, neatly timed to coincide with the half-term break, wasn't popular with Sir Teddy Taylor MP, who agreed only reluctantly to attend a 100-person feeling and touching symposium, resulting in room service being sent an urgent order for 99 barge poles. Scored at the end of the round one up. Francis and Tony 4, Jeremy and Nick 4. Start round two with an item spotted in the big issue.
In Sydney, rejected spouse Arlon Pumpleweed parachuted into his wife's second marriage disguised as a penis. Mr. Pumpleweed had been devastated when wife Marcia left him, citing as her reason his failure to satisfy her sexually. When she announced she was remarrying, he realized drastic action was needed. It was an outdoor ceremony, he explained, and I decided to skydive into it wearing a penis costume. The idea was to land on the altar and shout, this big enough for you, Master. Unfortunately, as Mr. Pumpleweed descended from on high, he was blown off course by freak winds, landing instead in the middle of a teddy bear's picnic for defiance. Told the kids it was a tall pink teddy with a funny hat on. Cried the picnic's organizer, but I don't think they believed us.
Now that I've heard Charlotte Green say penis, I can die happy.
Thanks to Ross McDougall of Piddlington, Dorset, for that. Round two begins with a question to Francis. Whose admission received a less than ecstatic reception?
Stephen Fry?
Mm-hmm.
Not content with being film star, novelist, autobiographer, comedian, all the rest of it. He's Chancellor of Scottish University as well. Has been for some years. And in all these interviews he's doing at the moment, because he hates the media, Stephen Fry, newspapers and people, he says they're all ghastly. But he has to go and talk to them about once a minute. And he said ecstasy was good fun. Everyone should try it. And unfortunately, the university has just introduced a big... drugs programs trying to discourage students from taking this stuff. He said you should try everything once except incest and Morris dancing, I think. Which is all they do at places like Aberdeen University, I believe. But instead he's making them take ecstasy, so he may be sacked. Is this right?
Mm. Well, I mean, drugs are dangerous. Look what happened to Mr. Pumpleweed.
The thing is that drugs do make people feel marvellous. That's the point. That's why they're called things like ecstasy instead of despair or middle-aged misery. I mean, they do make people feel marvellous, which is their appeal, which is why they become a problem. If you took them and they made you feel aloof and not feel like dancing, they wouldn't sell. No good saying that you take it and you automatically become extremely fat and find yourself gardening.
Lots of people take Sonatogen, don't they?
Well, if you cut it with something else, it's...
His comments drew criticism from students at Dundee University, where he is the rector, and they said he should know better than to dabble in drugs. It's not so long since he ran off to Belgium in a blind panic after doing only a couple of lines. Tony, which head of state tells an old tale?
Going to have a new Queen's head on the coins sometime next year. I think they're going to do it to coincide with the day when they finally sort out the ticket machines in stations to take the new smaller 50p coins. On the day they announce that they'll introduce all these other ones that they won't be able to accept. No, so she's going to look 71 in the latest one. They've drawn a picture of her. The bloke who's done it, I think his name's Ian Rank Broadley. He's the designer. A bit of a gift to critics who want to say that most of his work is broadly rank. But he's drawn a picture or sculpted the Queen looking quite old, and people have made criticisms and said, you know, well, she just looks like an old lady with a tiara on, which, heaven forfend, we don't want people to think that. So that's the case. But as long as they don't change the notes, they've got to keep the Queen the same on the notes. So that you can still do the thing, I don't know whether any of you have done this, where you take a £5 note and you use the bottom half of the Queen's head, and then Charles Dickens, who's on the other side of the £10 note, you use the top half of his head, and if you put them together, it looks exactly like John McEnroe. I'm going to do it. Let's do it. Yeah, for the audience.
The magic of radio.
Yeah. Well, I'll do it for Francis. Because... Francis can confirm whether this works or not. It is fantastic, honestly, do this. Look at that, is John McEnroe, isn't it? Look,
Stephen Fry.
Have you noticed that the Queen started to look like a lookalike woman? For years, this little tubby lady called Jeanette Charles, for about 25 years, has been making a living out of looking like the Queen, and doesn't look anything like her at all, but suddenly... Bizarrely, the Queen has started to look like this little old tubby lady from North London.
She can make a lot of money opening supermarkets pretending to be Jeanette Charles.
Yes, of course.
It's true, there's a sign in my local post office. It said, new £5 coin on sale here. Only £5. Nick, your piece of music. Nick, whose news of the screws was that she wasn't getting any?
That's Fergie's story. Must be floating about somewhere. What would the news of the world run a story about somebody not getting something?
It's counting down.
Is it?
Francis has got it.
Yep. Oh, let Francis.
Oh, go on then, Francis.
It's Lorna Fitzsimons.
It is.
Mm. She's very nice. I met her the other day. Charming woman. And then she gave an interview to the News of the World shortly afterwards saying she wasn't getting any sex.
She's not getting any. The purpose of her interview, she felt she'd been introduced in this interview, was to demonstrate exactly how careful you had to be when you were a Labour MP in giving interviews to the press. And she then proceeded to tell the News of the World that she was no longer able to have al fresco sex or three-in-a-bed sex. All the things presumably she did do before that in Rochdale. In Rochdale? Al fresco sex in Rochdale?
I wonder if she spends time in sex shops, because she's actually dyslexic, so she probably goes to sock shops. Probably asks for some things that aren't in their range, I would think.
Jeremy, where are they loosening their old school ties?
Oh, is this Cambridge? Cambridge wants more oiks. Cambridge is worried that they've got not enough people applying because it's got a reputation for being toffee-nosed, and so they want to get more people from state schools to go. Presumably a message has come down from John Burt that there isn't a broad enough range of accents in BBC Light Entertainment. And so if you could get more ordinary people into Cambridge, then, you know, 3 years down the line, you'll have ordinary people running the BBC.
Thanks, Jeremy. Thanks very much indeed.
Did you go there? Did you go to Posh College?
I did. No, I was. I'm not prepared to discuss it now.
Superior, aren't they?
There is already evidence that the situation is improving, with at least one student from the most bizarre, dysfunctional, emotionally deprived background imaginable getting admission to Cambridge University. But then again, Prince Edward didn't have to pass any exams. And the scores at the end of round two are excitingly Jeremy and Nick with 6, but Francis and Tony in the lead with 9 points. And we start round three with a cutting from the Cornish Guardian.
The people of Cornwall have united as one to send a clear message to the powers that be. You'll close down our hospitals over our dead bodies.
Thanks to J.E. Wolfe of Bodmin for that. Francis, who may be defrocked after accusations of multiple defrockings?
The Reverend Clifford Williams, could it be?
It is he.
Yes, he's been hauled up before an ecclesiastical court. Charged with, I think, conduct unbecoming a Church of England vicar. Heterosexuality, to be precise. All sorts of women had been giving evidence at this court, saying that he had a sort of laying on of hands approach to his ministry. And one of these women was even taken on holiday to the Dead Sea. You see, that was a wonderful picture of them swimming together. And after that swim, he tried to show her his Dead Sea scroll, see if she could make head or tail of it, which I believe she did. There's been a lot of that. There was talk of three in a bed. But it's all mere allegations. The case continues as we speak, though by the time of the repeat, he may have been cleared of all charges. So I would not wish to pass judgment.
I think there was some unfortunate people gave evidence as well. The unfortunately titled Bishop of Bangor gave some evidence. and the place where the woman lived is actually a place in Anglesey called Teen E Gongle. I was wondering whether he had a teeny gongle. She'd probably be the only person that knows, I don't know.
And he was a rector as well.
Yeah. This concerns the alleged sexual antics of the married rector of Benchleck in Anglesey, Reverend Clifford Williams. An ecclesiastical court charged Mr. Williams with having sexual relations with certain parishioners, which seems strange as there's nothing new in a Welshman being over-familiar with his flock. The court was shown incriminating photographs of the priest and his female friend in the Dead Sea. Mr. Williams said that they were perfectly innocent, though he did concede that the great thing about floating in the Dead Sea was it's possible for a man to keep it up for hours on end without ever feeling tired. Your music, Tony.
Well, I hope you'll come and see me in the movies. Then I'll know that you will plainly see the biggest fool that ever hit the big time. And all I gotta do is act naturally.
Tony, why was Calf's Calf upset about roles being sold?
EastEnders, Gillian Tailforth, unfortunately, again in the news. This time, it's either her uncle or a cousin, depending on which paper you read, I think, who, I don't know whether it's alleged or whether he's admitted, I can't remember, but he sort of was selling roles in EastEnders. I think people would give him some money, and then he'd sort of introduce them to various people, including Gillian Tailforth, and then next week they'd be in the background sort of sipping tea. And they pay thousands of pounds for this privilege, apparently. Quite why someone would want to do that, I don't know. But he's apologised, I think, to her. He said, you know, and he said she's totally innocent in this whole affair. He said that she was innocent as a lamb. Well, given allegations about her a couple of years ago, it seems to me that lambs obviously learn quite quickly these days, really.
Those allegations of a couple of years ago are completely false. There are no services on the A1.
Jeremy, who sharpened her axe for a literary battle?
This is Christine Hamilton has written a book called The Bumper Book of Battle Axes. And she's been saying that men feel threatened by strong women, and that's possibly true, but it's more likely that men feel threatened by women like Christine Hamilton. And I'll always remember this, the picture of her, you know, after the whole scandal broke and there was a photo op and his hair's flapping in the wind and she's smoothing it across his head, and you think, that man lives in hell.
We now know that she modelled herself on a cross between Boadicea and Cynthia Payne. Isn't that right?
What, she rides a chariot over you and you enjoy it?
Christine Hamilton's bumper book of British battle axes can be yours for only $14.95, payable by cheque, credit card, or three used fibres in a brown paper envelope. Scores at the end of round three are Jeremy and Nick with 8, but Francis and Tony leaping into the lead with 14 points. And before we start the final humiliating round for Nick and Jeremy, here's a cutting from the Yorkshire Gazette.
After playing football for Rillington and Sherburn a fortnight ago, Alan experienced chest pains and a loss of sensation in his arms. He went to Malton Hospital, where he was treated for a sprained ankle.
Thanks to the many people who sent that in. Francis, your piece of music. Francis, which hotel had a ding-dong over village bells?
We know.
They don't know.
They don't know, Simon.
Do you think we ought to answer it or not?
Well, we know, but we should let them have it, don't you think?
Yes, I think you're way ahead.
We don't want your pity.
Give them a clue and then let them really humiliate them.
We only want your points.
Why don't you all answer it?
All right. You answer it first.
Well, to be honest, I was bluffing and I don't really know.
It's about a hotel and a bell. I think Jeremy and Nick...
No, what it is, it's basically a hotelier in Yorkshire. And his customers have been complaining about a ding-dong constantly all night outside their hotel rooms. And he wants to have it muffled at night, as it were, so that they can't hear it and they can get to sleep. And the villagers all think it's absolutely lovely and they can't sleep. They think they won't be able to sleep if you stop the noise of the bell. And that's
They're
how interesting
weird.
It is.
Country people are so weird. Have you seen Deliverance? That's what they're like. I mean, it's hard getting to sleep in a hotel because the cleaners start hoovering at 5 a.m. and the builders start drilling at 6. And the idea that you're next to a church with a bell. I mean, have you tried getting to sleep in the countryside? It's this place called Nid in North Yorkshire near Knaresborough. And the countryside is appalling. It's so loud. There's all these sort of wild and domesticated birds and beasts. And you've got shotguns going off in the middle of the night and tornado jets buzzing and the crackle of overhead power lines and the faint hissing, seeping sound from the nearby power station. And this combined with church bells. And this hotel, they thought, well, what we'll do is we'll stop the church bells. And the local people said, you don't understand our country ways, you townies. It's a field sport being woken up every 15 minutes through the night. It's our heritage. They're warped, they really are.
I bet you're glad you asked.
It's a hotel in the North Yorkshire village of Nid, which has asked the local church to fit its bells with a silencer. Until the dispute is sorted out, the hotel is offering weekend breaks on a Parisian theme. You don't actually get to Notre Dame, but at least you're guaranteed a hunched, bleary-eyed figure appearing at breakfast shouting, "The bells! The bells!" Tony, why can't men think if they're getting too much?
Well, before I answer this question, I'd just like to remind those of you listening to the Saturday edition of this show that the clocks go back in the early hours of Sunday morning. And for those of you listening to the Monday edition of this show who forgot to do that, we're not actually on for another hour. I've forgotten the question now.
Tony, why can't men think if they're getting too much?
This is Californian research done on rats, I think. And this man has discovered that too much sex shrinks the male brain. And I would go on with the answer to this question, but I haven't got any more mental capacity.
I was going to volunteer the name of the author of the research for a bonus point, but it might suggest that my life is rather sad. His name is Breedlove.
Question referred to a scientific study made in California that discovered that too much sex can shrink male brains. was proved by scientists in America who carried out sex experiments using small furry rodents at the Richard Gere Memorial Hospital. Nick, how did a diplomatic friendly descend into undiplomatic farce?
Well, this was football, and it only goes to show, I don't know what it shows quite, South Africa and Ireland put their diplomats out against each other on a football field in West London, and there was all hell to pay. By the end of the match, there were about 13 of them lying unconscious on the ground, and the police had to be called in order to break up a horrendous set-to. Interestingly, you know, the South Africans think they can solve the Irish problem, and the Irish always thought they could solve the South African problem. And now they've found that it ain't true. And the result, for all who were interested, was 2-1 at the time when the match was finally abandoned. It's very sad that you haven't asked me the question about earwax, though.
It is sad, yes. Would you like to answer it?
Well, I do think it's sad. I just think people should know about the man who saved enough earwax to wax his table. I'm actually really baffled that you haven't asked that question.
And he found the time to do it while being Director General of the BBC at the same time.
Question concerned a mass brawl which broke out at a football match between teams from the Irish and South African embassies in London. The police had to be called and were faced with a terrible dilemma. Who to beat up first, the blacks or the Irish? 2 points, sir. Jeremy, who saw Not a Dicky Bird?
Nick's writing something on my notepad. I have always loved you. I cannot live a lie anymore. Siberian ruby throat, you dirty cow. And you're the man that does the world at once.
No, there were 1,000 twitchers, weren't they? They all turned out in Dorset to look at this very rare bird that had been blown off course on a journey from Moscow to the Philippines. And when they got there, of course, the bird had flown. That's more or less it. It's a very pretty bird, or it would have been if anyone had seen it.
Before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along.
Simon, this is from the Eastern Daily Press, my local paper in East Anglia. Doctors Leach, Barnard, Copson and Spring of Newmarket Road, Norwich, are pleased to announce that their surgery is now an officially designated yellow fever centre.
Tony.
This is from the Bath Fringe Festival programme, Wiltshire and Bath Organist Association Organ Day. This event is an introduction to playing the organ. Grade 3 piano standard needed by participants. All ages welcome. There will be plenty of hands-on opportunities at several organs.
Nick.
Well, this is about, this is the Telegraph's version of the Ernest Digweed story, the chap who died and left all his money to Jesus Christ in the event of a second coming. Anyway, a lot of people have applied for this money in the interim since he died. 3 volumes of files, the paper says, each 6 inches thick, contain the details of hundreds of claims to the bequest, including one from an American door-to-door salesman. He claimed he was entitled to the money on the basis that whenever he knocked on a door, he was greeted with the response, "Jesus Christ, not you again."
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final scores, which are Jeremy and Nick staging an amazing comeback with 14, but Francis and Tony clinging on to the lead with 16 points. And thanks to everyone. We'll be back next week for the last programme in the series. Until then, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Ween, Jeremy Hardy, Tony Hawkes and Nick Clark. The chairman was Simon Hoggart and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by Ian Pattinson and Hugh Rycroft. The producer was...